Our solution to inequality, poverty, is basically opportunity. To ensure that every Singaporean, if you have agency, if you work hard enough, you get there.
Put the kids in school. This is the number one thing.
Precisely.
Keep them there.
Not just register them. Keep them in school.
Okay. Hello, everyone. As you can see, Steve is not in the studio today. He is in fact, in New York on filming. So I guess we'll be spared his bad dad jokes. Okay. But if you follow us, you know that we've had a few political office holders who have come to talk to us about their plans post-budget. This is the last of our series. And we have with us in the studio, Mr. Masagos Zulkifli. He is Singapore's Minister for Social and Family Development, or MSF. Welcome,
Hello.
Minister. And he's not alone. Together with him, we have Flora Tan. She's a senior social worker for Children and Youth Services of Care Corner. Welcome both.
Thank you.
Okay, Minister Masagos, I want to start with you. You know, in our pre-chat, you were talking about being an electrical engineer. That was your training. So
yes.
You're good at math.
Yes.
Okay, so you worked in Singtel for many years before coming on to MSF. And I wanted to ask you, I know it's a bit unfair to ask you to choose a favorite, like choosing a favorite child, but what do you think is the toughest and most rewarding in your career, in your long career, you know?
The good thing is that it all fed into one another. So what I did in Singtel, although it's a lot of engineering, Singtel gave me time to actually do a lot of so-called community work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was also a president of an NGO, Perdaus, which people don't know Perdaus, but perhaps people know Mercy Relief.
Yes,
Mercy Relief. Yeah. So Perdaus founded Mercy Relief.
Oh.
Yes, and okay. It was a way for us basically to get the Muslims to say to practice charity beyond Malays, beyond Muslims, and beyond Singapore.
Mm.
And it really mattered when the Aceh tsunami happened.
That's right.
And then after that, we reimagined Mercy Relief to be an organization not only by Muslims, but we gave it up to become a national body.
Yes.
I think that was when PM Lee, then DPM, who launched that event, got to know me, I suppose, you know. Mm. We still have a very nice old photo of a very young Mr. Lee and a very young Masagos launching Mercy Relief.
Mm.
So I have been doing a lot of community work in that sense.
Okay.
And moving from one ministry to another, when I started work here, from Ministry of Education, Home Affairs,
Foreign Affairs,
Environment,
yep. Water resources.
Right. Yes, and then MSF and Health.
Yeah.
In one way or another, you either are taking care of people,
yep.
or you are taking care of them. Of the environment, so
yes.
you're taking care of something.
Yes,
and care is that big word.
Okay,
so. Not much of a transition in that sense, just that the nature of the work and the focus of who we are caring for or what we are caring for shift.
So, Flora, tell us a bit more about your work. Why did you choose social work? Why did you choose to work with young people?
I work with young people. Majority of them are about 9 to 21 years old. So that's quite a big range.
That's quite wide.
Yeah, yeah. But the main program that I run, which Minister is very familiar with, is it's an outreach program. It's a street outreach program.
Okay.
Yeah. And we work with at-risk youths. So majority of them might not be very well engaged at home or in school.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be out there on the streets,
yep.
which leaves them exposed to a lot of different antisocial influences.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about how then the role of the adult or a practitioner comes into play to ensure that they get the resources that they need,
okay.
and to ensure that there's an environment
right.
That's present in the community for them.
Right, right.
Yeah. Actually, it's a very humbling kind of work. Yeah, with young people, they are brutally honest with you. they are candid, you know, about the questions you're asking. They are not so polished yet in their thinking. Everything's so raw. But it also gives us an opportunity to co-create experiences together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just that vibrancy that comes no matter what background they're from.
Yeah.
Yeah, but being able to pick up their stories and their journeys,
but
I think...
Surely they can't be that easy. I mean, I think young people can be tough, right? Yes, have they ever said, oh, you know, why are you talking to me? I don't want to talk to you about my problems.
We get that all the time. In fact, I had youths who pointed their middle finger at me.
Oops.
Yeah, in the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, one even sent a picture of it to me. Yeah, when I reached out to him. We know why they are behaving this way. Mm. It might have been a certain kind of history with adults in their lives.
Yeah.
But here is an opportunity to let them experience something different. Okay. And that's where our expertise is.
Yeah, but it's so uncommon, Minister, I'm sure, for young people to choose social work, right? Nowadays, you have young people who tell me that they want to earn certain amount by a certain time. You know, if you go into IT or fintech, you can earn that much really quickly. You know, and also the work, social work itself is tough. It's tough work. I mean, I used to be what we called the welfare reporter when I was starting out. Ah. So I spent a lot of time in and around rental flats at the juvenile court, which is now family court. And, you know, and so I used to, you know, interview these families. But as a reporter, you see, I interview them and then I'm out. I don't know what happens to the family. It doesn't really affect me except for the time that I'm there, seeing how they live, for example. But even, you know, but for you guys, you have to stick with them sometimes for years. And what strikes me is that a lot of the times these problems are not logical, right? People make decisions they shouldn't be making kind of over and over again. How do you see this?
So our work is to solve that poverty on the street. It takes a whole ecology. It takes everyone in, and it's a very long, long process. Youth Go, for example, where Flora is working in. I started this when I was in Home Affairs. In 2008 or 9, you know, that long ago. And that was to solve problems upstream, to reach out to youth before they offend, and really even more upstream. So that when we look at the people who have offended, whether they take drugs, whatever it is, they always have some history when they were young.
Yes.
And if you make contact with them early, hopefully you pick them out.
Yeah.
And then downstream, you have less offenders, or at least the offense are not as egregious as
so
they
stand
then. Not so entrenched, and they can get out. And they have people they have met before. So this continuity of care and also the ecology of care is something that I think in Singapore we are very lucky to have. So we may, Flora may be taking care of one part of the work, but in the government we have to look at it holistically, and we put these pieces together and we try to do it as systematically as possible. We also must recognize that beyond that there are other work or other aspects of welfare that is not really welfare. For example, NTUC always say, and rightfully, the best welfare is a job.
Yes, of course.
So ensuring we have jobs for people, make sure that they don't end up in poverty or they have a future and opportunity. Housing, health, all these things have to do with social spending that help to prevent problems downstream. But then people do fall off, you know. That's where our ministry comes in, you know. So whether they are the children, their youth, the family, the parents. So we put in a whole system of safety net so that when they fall through, it's as temporary as possible. And we want, and in Singapore is a place where, you know, I remember writing this when Mr. Lee Kuan Yew passed away. They asked you to put
the
post-it notes.
But
I wrote this. I said that, you know, if you knew you were going to be born poor or minority, pray to be born in Singapore. They'll take care of you.
Okay.
So I think I thought, you know, this is the system Mr. Lee Kuan Yew and his pioneers created for us. And that's, you know, this there's always a chance for everyone to do well.
Yeah.
But even when you have done well, you can fall off.
Of course.
Yeah. And then the family, we do not want the family or the person to then fall off and be entrenched forever. Mm. And therefore, we want to give a leg up. And that's why for all families, our philosophy in MSF is to give them stability, to make them self-reliant, and to ensure that they get social mobility, not for themselves, at least for their children.
For their family.
Yes.
It's about, you know, very often it is multifactorial, right? And so just, and I feel like it's also generational. And it can be quite tough. So I used, you know, to teach kids who come from disadvantaged families. And, you know, we always tell them, whatever you do, doesn't matter how you do it, just pass and get the diploma. Right? Because as long as you get the diploma, you can get a good, a better wage than not, right? But getting, sometimes the getting there is the hard part. And so there's a lot of falling through, and then it's just heart-wrenching work, kind of non-stop. So there's always the issue of burnout, right?
It's important, I think, for us as practitioners to understand the nature of the issues. It's not really just about my skills, my program, and my services, and how effective they are. But moving forward, it's, can I understand that these issues are actually nested within a broader system? And to ensure that as a social worker, I am also looking for these opportunities to partner with other systems.
Right. So it could be a teacher.
It could be a teacher. It could be
a neighbor.
A neighbor or a fellow business owner who is willing or has a heart for young people and is willing to give out apprenticeships.
But how you know, how tough is that, right? I mean,
it
to be
tough.
Able to find all these different people in the kids' constellation.
That's what governments do. That's what governments do. We organize. We organize. We organize, especially the agencies, to make sure that everyone is synchronized. We know that, for example, living or being entrenched in a rental home, it's not good anywhere in the world. Because that's the kind of the place where it's too small for the kids and so forth. It's good temporary shelter, but it's not a permanent home that we want to see for, especially the young. So we have to work then with the housing agency to see how we can, you know, help them. If usually it will take, say, 8 years to save up, can we do it in four? For example, what does the family need to do? What do they have to address? And then we bring in the social worker, whether it is about their financial needs, whether it's about the motivational needs. And in the meantime, they also have to look at their children, because while they have this complex problem as adults, you know, we don't want the children to be neglected. We want to make sure they still can benefit from the best education in the world that we have in Singapore. And then when the children, like you say, either get the diploma, in fact, a NITEC or high NITEC,
is good enough.
It's not good enough. The family's fortunes change. Yes. Because suddenly you have an injection of $3,000 into the home, into the family's
income.
So it's education.
So it's not about just, you know, there are some people who say, oh, we are a very wealthy country, you know, we can give more money to people who are under, you know, privileged.
That's one solution. But then someone got to give the money. And that's where the government comes in again and say, look, we want to make sure that where we get the money, do not tax people exorbitantly, so that it becomes demotivating for them even to work. So in Singapore, for example, the tax system is such that we take from the income tax really minimally, 21%, 22%. And for over a lot of our population, they get a lot of rebates. We don't want to take so much tax that this tax may go to the people who then may have a better life. But it also demotivates the majority who have to work hard to support this small group. And therefore, you do two things. Number one, make sure that those who are being supported can have a decent life in an urban setting like Singapore. And that includes needs like education, having a computer, even having, you know, a vacation nearby once a year. Give him that
and healthcare,
discretion.
Right? If your kid is sick.
Yes, particularly healthcare.
You shouldn't have to pay too much out of pocket to see someone.
And then on top of that, I believe that the generosity of corporates, of people who have done well, they then top up the kind of things that they like to see other people have to share what they already have. Mm-hmm. And Singaporeans are actually very generous. So,
are they?
Yes, very generous. You know, I
think they can be more generous.
See?
No, but they have...
For rich Singaporeans to give more money.
No need... In fact, those who give are not just very rich. They are just generous. They don't mind sharing even little, but put together is a lot.
I know there's no magic bullet,
but
what works? To lift a family out of, let's say, intergenerational poverty, dysfunction, addiction, etc.
It takes a whole village to do it.
So no one simple answer.
There's no one simple answer, and every family is unique. But generally speaking, you want to ensure the family gains stability first.
Okay.
Ensure that financially they are okay, they can go to work. If they can't work, then we need to support them for a while. Make sure their children go to school. And then in the meantime, you don't have the skills to go to the work that is waiting for them.
Right.
Give them those skills so that they can move from a lower paying job to a higher paying job, for example. So all those things take time. Once they are stable, they are self-reliant.
Yes.
They can become self-reliant.
Right.
And then we let magic happen, and then social mobility will happen. So our solution to inequality, poverty, is basically opportunity. To ensure that every Singaporean, if you have agency, if you work hard enough, you get there.
Put the kids in school. This is the number one thing.
Precisely.
Keep them there.
Not just register them.
Keep them there. But you see, that's a challenge, right?
Indeed.
So, you've increased your rates of preschool enrollment.
Yes.
Attendance remains a problem, though, right?
For this group.
You're under 20% kind
that's
of.
That's right. And that's because they do have a complex problem. So we now have instituted a new program, relative new program called Combling Plus.
Yes.
Where we look at families living in rental homes, having children, and we also have extended it to those who are on the Kid Start program.
Yep.
More than 10,000 families. They have a befriender, they have a family coach to befriend them and to journey them at their pace while they are, you know, peeling off the problems they are facing.
Mm.
And therefore, the idea is to do at least these few things. Number one, keep your children in school. And we give them incentive when the children stay in school, particularly preschool.
Right.
And then get a job which is CPF paying.
Mm.
Because when you have a job which is CPF paying, you also have savings. And then we will use that also to incentivize more, to incentivize them into the CPF paying job. We top up the CPF for their saving to then go to the third one, which is getting a home.
Yeah.
So something to do now, which is getting a job, something to get within 4 to 5 years, which is getting a home.
Right.
And within 10 years or 15 years, the child graduates and everything hopefully gets better.
Right. But, you know, this group, right, about 66% have yet to accumulate enough in their CPF ordinary account to actually buy a home, right?
Yes.
So that's quite a big number.
Indeed.
You know, what do you think is the biggest challenge here?
So it's the choices people make. Sometimes they just enjoy a cash situation where everything goes into their pocket and they can spend.
Yes.
Nothing goes into the savings because somehow the job is like that. And they enjoy that, they like that, and then they also like the time that they have in control. And then, but for the long term...
It becomes a problem for them.
Not only for them, because when they grow older, they have no retirement, they have no retirement plan, and therefore no retirement life.
Yeah.
Who then pays for it?
Right.
It will be society. But if they do it and if they prepare themselves early, get a CPF paying job, for example, accumulate enough, put that into an asset like a home, that becomes your asset when you retire.
Yeah.
And I think that formula, particularly for this group of people, is a very important thing to have.
Right.
Unfortunately, there are also the gig economy.
I used to have some of these students who come and tell me, right?
Yes.
You see, when they graduated, let's say ITE or whatever, they could get a job maybe, you know, one of those admin jobs or security jobs or cashiering, etc., bartendering. But it's long hours.
Yes.
And it's maybe 1,000 plus, less than 2,000. Now, the world has opened up.
Yes.
They are free to do whatever they want in between their deliveries. Mm. So that's the economy that is changing, right? And and if I were a young person and I could earn the same, if not more, for less hours, I'm going to take it, right?
Yes, of course. Mm. And therefore, this Comlink program puts someone who knows, someone who can coach them, someone who make them aware and make them understand, someone who they take as a friend. So we are not sending just social workers who do it, you know, as professionally as possible.
Yeah, because they might not listen, right?
Even if they do,
they'll be like,
some of them are really good at their job, really. And many of them are good at their job. But then when you have something beyond a listening ear, a coach-like person who's not just a social worker, but someone who can coach and mentor because they can listen, I think it will make a big difference. I have visited a number of Comlink families and very happy that at least for the lower hanging fruits, things are really turning around for them.
Okay.
If we had not been there early in that stage of their life, I think they will be in that same rental house for the next 20 years. And some of them are already taking action, making plans now to get into a BTO and having a savings plan and getting new jobs, getting new skills.
I think so that's very rewarding for you.
Indeed, indeed. Mm. And for me to go there myself.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that every family will be like that, but we must move as many of them across the red line as possible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess it depends on their readiness level.
Yes.
Yeah, because It's not just a matter of having someone there with you, but actually for many of them, they are at different levels of readiness.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So for those who are, and you can have all the resources there, which I think there has been a lot of effort to make sure that there are certain schemes or incentives.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, you can't force someone to use them.
Of course.
Yeah. So it depends on where they are at. And sometimes many things might be occupying their minds or the decision-making process.
But the whole work concentrates on three approaches. Number one is family centricity. We do not just look at the mother who may have family violence, victim of family violence, or the child who may not go to school. We look at the whole family as a whole unit, one that we need to live together, and one that we want to address issues as we meet the child. We also meet the whole family and we address issues as they come or when they come. And secondly, we also look at strength-based approach. So what is it in the family that works, that they can we can use, we can get them to basically lift themselves up?
Okay.
Because everyone has something. I met one family, for example, the wife wants to spend time at home and wants to do not want to work out there.
Mm.
But you know very well that if she goes out to work, she can supplement her husband's
income.
Salary.
Mm.
Then just ask her, have you heard of, she's from Indonesia, have you heard of home-based business?
Mm.
Then you say, well, I'm a good cook, you know. I think I can sell, but I don't want to go out. Well, why don't you go through this course where they teach you to do marketing for your home-based business? And and then suddenly you can see her eyes lit up and say, yes, I think we can do this. So
it's a highly customized approach. Yeah, according
correct.
To what
but
the
somebody
family
has to suggest this.
That's where the family coach comes in.
Oh, but do you have enough family coaches? There's so many families.
Yes,
right?
We do. I think we're still looking for them. We're still looking for more.
Okay.
But already those who are assigned, I think I see them really find a fulfilling job.
Right.
Seeing it's still early days, but already for those, like I said, who are already ready to move with the solutions,
then
I'm very
happy.
Then
it's a good fit.
Indeed.
It has to be a good fit between the service user and the service.
Yeah. In the past, we wait for people to come. I think social workers are in the FSCs. You know, I'm not saying you're not doing anything, but when people come knocking their door, people come knock the door, then you say, okay, we have a problem to solve.
Yeah.
And I think by the time that happens,
it's a bit late.
Not only late, very costly to both the taxpayers, mm. to the family is sometimes intractable, very difficult. Exactly. So you want to go upstream as much as possible. And that's why we knock doors early.
Right. Mm. But then you need, you know, the labour market is very tight.
Mm. Yes.
So you need people, right? You need boots on the ground. You need professionals. Yes. I know SUSS has just started a new degree in social work, which is great.
Mm.
But my social worker friends are very busy.
Yes.
Mm. And, you know, burnout is real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So their cases are nonstop.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
You know, so it takes a while, right? I mean, it's not as if you
can
just...
It takes a long time sometimes.
Yeah.
Many years.
It's not like you can just snap your finger and then I have three social workers all ready to go. It doesn't work like that, right? Mm. So what's your biggest challenge in recruiting people?
You know, there's a hygiene that we have to address first. And that is to ensure that they are paid properly. Because
would you pay them equal to an IT grad, like those guys who are working in?
No, I think it is not about who gets. It should not be a race down. You know, everyone chasing one another and then raising salaries.
Yeah.
It has to also be compared to a similar segment, for which if you don't pay them well in that segment, they can easily go to the other.
That's right.
And therefore, you look at which segments they are and make sure their salaries are competitive.
Mm.
We have benchmarks and and many of our work's done by what we call social service agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And we support them. We pay. We support a lot of that, of the salaries that goes into the work that they do on our behalf.
I see.
But the agencies themselves must make sure they pay that much because they too...
But you see, that's the thing about social work, right? It's not profit-driven. It's not like fintech or bank or, you know, companies.
Right? So we want to make sure the costs are not why they shut down or why the person doesn't do the work.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
So that's where the support comes
precisely,
as well,
precisely.
Government support in that sense.
So salary is highly subsidized, so that cost matters are put aside first.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is also, of course, the sense of the professionalism of our social worker. And this is going to be harder and sometimes more complex because they have to deal with, for example, technology.
Mm.
The people they're dealing with are also will be... Not the same group, not with the same psyche nor culture that, I mean, my generation has gone through, you know.
Yeah.
They may be, so maybe even the bottom 20%, but they're educated and they make choices that, you know, you cannot understand why they get into gambling or they get into
addictions.
Addictions,
are real, right?
For example, or social media addiction, gaming addiction, those kind of things that destroys a good dynamics within a family.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they need to be equipped with the most current skill, the most current technology and tools.
Mm.
And at the same time, I think what we can do for them is the sense of social mission, you know, that they must come to the job, not as a career. I know, I always tell our social worker, you know, what their real job is. Their job is to find Steve Jobs.
Find Steve Jobs?
Yeah, because Steve Jobs was... A boy given away by a single mother who, you know, if the system had not worked, he would have been, we wouldn't have our iPhone, we wouldn't have our iPods. And then...
because he didn't come from privilege, basically.
No,
somebody
didn't.
Adopted him.
And
right?
it was
and
the social system that got him there.
Yeah, okay.
So we need... We have a very noble mission. Find our Steve Jobs.
But is a social worker... must be a certain type. You must have a heart for this kind of work.
Ultimately, we want somebody to come in with a heart for the population because skills and competence can be trained.
Mm.
But things to do with your perspective on the issues or how you are viewing young people, for example, or people who are highly addicted, that matters. And that's going to affect the way that you work
absolutely.
With them.
So
we want to make sure that the people are coming in are compassionate, that they are capable of empathy, and that they can think critically as well. So it's a bit of we need...
It's
the
tough,
heart
though.
And the mind. It is.
So cannot, I can, I'm too judgmental. I think I cannot.
And there's also one other complication today, more than before, is that they have to work with people who are not social workers, for example.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So or you, as in counselors, psychologists.
Even police, teachers.
Oh, yeah.
So they have to relate to people who have nothing to do with social work and don't understand social work.
Yeah.
So when we started this Youth Go, that time, you know, when kids have offended, the police at that time want to close the file quickly and charge the guy. You know, because once you charge the person, job done.
Yes, of course.
The school wants that kid out of school because it's so troublesome, right?
Yes.
The social worker said, please don't do either. So I brought everyone together and said, look, it's not about your job.
Yeah.
It's about the kid.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so let's work for the kid and bring the family together and try to resolve this.
That's right.
And I think now we have got it right. So
but now the police are taking very long to charge.
Because we don't want them to...
But a bit too long. Because what happens is that a lot of my boys, they are about 16 to 17, and then they are about reaching 18, right?
Yes.
So what happens is that they are just in limbo.
I see.
And the police take so long to charge them.
They do have to deal with the most egregious case first.
Yeah, that's true.
Boys will be boys sometime, and you know...
But it's a concern because a lot of them end up feeling like, then let me just stop school. There's no reason to have to engage myself because I think I'm going to go in.
Yes.
Yeah, and to deal with that day to day, week in, week out.
It's a tough thing.
Yeah, because they're just almost languishing.
Yeah.
Yeah, to them it's just a matter of gaining quick pleasure. So as long as I'm out with my friends, I can enjoy time with them. Money doesn't have to be hard earned.
Which is why we want to make sure they're in school. Because you are in school, you are occupied productively.
But a lot of them with that profile are not in school.
Those guys with that profile, I'll tell you why they're not in school also, because they don't really have to worry about money. They're selling all kinds of things on Carousel and Telegram.
It's worrying, right?
Because it's easy. I mean, that's just the ecosystem you guys are working
in. This is what I meant. I mean, just now, when we talk about what was the past, what they were trained for 10 years ago and what they have to meet, it's a totally different problem.
Yeah.
What I put in 10 years ago, where it was working so well, and because that was the problem we're trying to solve, now it's a different problem. And they now have to deal with a situation.
Telegram, technology, which makes committing crime a lot easier.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yeah. Correct. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and it makes money easier to come by.
Yes.
Without putting in the hours, the time, the effort.
No proper skill. You don't grow your skill. Lifestyle.
You know how to sell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things I think we kind of can't ignore is that you were talking about how entrenched some of these problems are, and it can be very complicated, especially when there's addiction involved.
Yes.
Quite often when we read about these cases, it's very heartbreaking.
Mm.
I cannot finish reading it. As a parent, I just simply can't. I can't imagine when a case like that comes in on your desk. As a parent, as a grandparent, even if you're not a parent, just the sheer level of cruelty, for example, leading to deaths. I mean, what's, first of all, your reaction? And then, how do you look at it from an intervention point of view and a prevention point of view?
So we go upstream as much as possible to prevent downstream problems happening.
Yeah.
And when you do that, there will be those that falls through. Sometimes it's not because the child protection officer isn't doing the job. She doesn't even know there was such a problem. You know, we had a case of a girl who's been sitting in the market and everyone passes by and nobody tells us. So really it takes the whole village to make sure these things don't happen.
Right.
Families, friends,
neighbors.
You know?
But because it always strikes me that we live in such a dense population.
Yes.
Like I can hear my neighbor cooking, right?
Yes. Mm. Yes.
So what do you think is this thing where, you know, a child, for example, is being abused, but nobody kind of knows until very much later, it's too late?
The upside to that is these are really rare. You really discover it, unfortunately, very late. But they are rare. I don't want always to point fingers at why didn't you tell us, why, you know.
Why did this fall through the cracks?
Precisely. I think the first thing when those things happen, I always write in my mail, how's the officer doing? Because, we need to help her first. It has happened. The officer who deal with this case is needs support.
Yeah.
And
I imagine that they would be
traumatic.
Devastated, right?
Yes, traumatic. And if once I'm satisfied that she or he is given the support, then say, okay, what shall we do now?
What to tighten, for example,
and what we need to improve, and to make sure that these things don't happen again.
Yeah.
You know, reporting is the simplest thing you can do. But sometimes judgments, you know, they evade us. We think it is not. It is okay, but actually it is not. Already the sign of something going very badly.
Yeah.
And that's when I think, you know, you have to deal with the situation, which is why I say I never assume that the day will end peacefully for me, because I'm always waiting for something to happen. I think it's more intense in Home Affairs, but it's less painful, I suppose. When it happens. Yes.
Because in MSF, it's usually
it's children. And women.
I also cannot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, when it comes to women particularly, they are the most resilient of us, you know. And it may be tragic, but you can see they really care for their children. If we really help them, they will pick up. They have that resilience, you know.
Yeah.
I know one case personally when I was dealing with as an MP. The husband got arrested for drug addiction, for drug abuse offense. But that's so many years after. But at that point of time, they just sold the house, and now the husband is locked up. Therefore, the CPF cannot be used.
I see.
So she has no money and no house.
Yeah.
And so we had to work with a social worker and the HDB to make sure that she has somewhere to stay. And you know, the rule is that if you have sold your house, you can't get a rental home.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, you have money, right? But see, that's the rule.
But she didn't really have the money.
She doesn't, and the agency sometimes don't realize what's happening. I have to, you know, right here, right there, call people and so forth. And then we made exceptions and got her into a rental home. And then I got a call from my assistant and said, she rejected it. I said, what happened, you know? We worked so hard to get the exception given to her. Then I found out that she got a place in Bedok and she wants to stay in Tampines, because if she stays in Bedok, she doesn't get my help anymore. I said, no, please tell her, get that house.
Your friend in Bedok. Who's your
friend? I told her, I will help you. I will help you because... I will see it through, you know.
Right.
But just to cut the story short, this family now, the husband's out. They now have their own home again. And the daughters are all finished polytechnic.
Yay.
So it takes years.
Yeah.
But, you know, the satisfaction of seeing something complete well while you have gone through all this difficult work. So I can empathize how social workers go through, because as MPs, we also get personally involved sometimes.
Yes. And those are the more difficult, you know, problems to solve, right?
Yep.
Not like a parking fine that you can waive or whatever. This is tough.
Real life. You can waive?
During election time, also can waive.
No.
Okay, so... let's wrap up with, you know, like maybe some, like a little bit more personal questions. Okay, so if you were making a pitch to a young person to pick social work instead of banking or finance, what would you say?
I think if you are someone who's interested in driving change that is lasting, sustainable and systemic, then this is the place for you. And if you want to develop your thinking and grow your heart, yeah, I think this will be the profession for you.
Minister, what would you say? What would you, but your quick pitch be to a young person to join you and help you help these people?
And I would say that every job is a good job, but there are very few jobs that are meaningful. And I think social work is a very meaningful job.
Okay. It's fair enough. Okay, MSF and associated agencies, you know, have quite a lot of networks. They do a wide range of work, psychologists, you know, counsellors, social workers, etc. Do you remember any case, even a small case, that you feel has really touched you? It's really, you told yourself at the end of the day, okay, you know what? this, my job matters.
Yes. I just told you that story just now of the woman.
Oh, the woman.
Yeah. Okay. And therefore I know this is one of many that our social worker make a difference in their life in, you know. And therefore they do very good work. And sometimes very quietly, and which is why this year we are celebrating, because
yes,
the year of celebrating social service professionals.
Yeah.
And we are doing many things. Among others, we have instituted a President Award for our social service workers. Not social worker alone, but everyone who are in the social service sector.
That's right.
That's a pinnacle award. And I think for President to agree to recognize this award, there are not many awards that President give. And now we've got him to agree to do this. And it says a lot about what the government, President, for example, and everyone should think about this sector.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember one kid? A kid you cannot forget, like one of the youths that you helped.
Something that I hold quite dearly will be a group of about 5 of them that we met in the neighbourhood. So they're all friends with each other. They were involved in some criminal activities, but they all had a shared passion for e-scooters. Okay, so actually that's quite common. They might be called road pairs and all of that, but SG Vigilante, right? So, but a lot of them love engineering or, you know, like using their hands to repair things and build things. We just did a cold call to somebody who does motorcycle detailing and cleaning.
Right.
So he just happened to be a dad of one of our other youths who was in this particular business. And he said, I'll give them one evening to try it out.
Okay.
And then after that, I'll connect them to an actual course where they can pick up these skills. They went for a 2-day automotive detailing course. And it was fully sponsored by that company.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and it was really nice for me to see over the 2 days, because it's not just about picking up the skills, but the facilitators and instructors and even the owners of that business took time to talk to these boys.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm not alone in this, but actually there are people out there who have a heart for young people like that,
right?
And they're willing to take that time to don't just give money, but it's like I'm building a relationship with you as you pick up these skills.
Okay.
And I think that's something I hope to see more of, that for our young people who may not be in school, or that's not really an environment that they feel successful in.
Yep.
Why can't we have some of these things, you know, like an apprenticeship model where our young people get access to real skills?
Yep. To learn interesting things that they enjoy, right?
Yes, and they are exposed and connected to people who care about them and who actually have capital, that becomes a resource for them. Yeah, so I think, with these boys, it was really nice seeing them in the cert, you know, you feel like they feel masterful at something, and it's not something criminal. Yeah, for once, like, no, it's not
change.
Like, yeah, it's
a
like,
win.
Yeah, and after
that's
that, yeah, and they were, after that, they were talking about, oh, no, should we just do like a car wash for the community to kind of like practice our skills? So to me, it's about people coming together. Yeah.
Okay. One last question. I feel eradicating poverty is an impossible mission. I don't think any society is able to do that. But if you had a magic wand, what would you wish for?
Well, the most important thing is that we always help one another. Mm. Because there will always be people who are plentiful, and there will be people who are needing. And therefore, if we help one another, we'll be all right.
Okay, Flora, last one for you. Magic wand.
Magic wand.
Yes.
And for money, is it? Like, if...
No, you whatever know,
or
you
whatever.
Wish. Whatever you wish.
Whatever I wish. I don't know what to call it, but maybe it's like in every community, there'll be like a school of sorts for misfits.
Mm.
Yeah, so...
Like the X-Men.
Sounds like a movie.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to call them misfits, but in a way...
Yeah, maybe not misfits,
it's a place.
Special
can't
folks.
Fit.
Yeah. How about fit... hear better.
Yeah.
So it's really about moving away from conventional forms of education, employment to more real world industry type of context.
I like that idea, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, we're done. Any last things you guys want to say?
Well, I just want to say thank you to all our staff, our volunteers, our professionals in the social service sector. These are our silent heroes, and they may not have solved poverty on the street, but they're always working at it.
So I guess it's really about staying in touch with what's going on, not just being holed up in our little service or our little program mm-hmm. and center, but also recognizing that actually there are lots of opportunities. It's how do we go out there and take hold of them and really see things from start to end.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And thanks very much to my team, to our team, Junaini Johari, Tiffany Ang, Saye Win, Joanne Chan, and Hanida Amin. Thank you and see you soon.
Thank you.